We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Spend some time with our friends Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel.
Yes.
Afternoons on the Score.
Oh, boy. That ball is crushed to left field. And that ball is way gone. Sandy Zavala, who hit his first three major league home runs in the same game, has bought in bulk at Yankee Stadium. It's 3-0.
This is well over 400. This was an absolute bomb to left.
Well, me personally, haven't had the best year, but we're winning. And I said I'll go over every time we win. So let's keep that going.
Sevi Zavala, it was a White Sox winner over the Yankees, four in a row. The game has been postponed tonight because of apocalyptic Gotham-like conditions in New York City. Texter said, I'm in Kansas City for the next couple of days, but Texter said that starting to see some of the ramifications of the fires from Canada in the air in the Chicagoland area. Are you notice anything downtown in Prudential Plaza?
You know, I as I look up here, I feel like I do a little bit. Looks a little hazy over the blue, but it's hard to tell in this town and from my particular chair. Have you guys, Shane and Tanny, noticed anything? Guys, go look outside.
Well, guys, you know, it's with Danny not being here, it's definitely not as bright as it could be outside, you know?
Our sky's always a little bit cloudy when our fearless leader isn't here with us.
Thanks, guys.
No, but it's softball on Monday. It was pretty hazy. I haven't seen anything since, but softball on Monday night when the sun was like really out, it was, and there were no clouds, the sun was still hidden a little bit.
Yeah, I don't watch what is it called? The news very often to learn things like that locally.
I thought you were in the knowledge acquisition business.
I am, but it's very specific. The knowledge that I'm trying to acquire, you know? Spend a lot of time acquiring sports knowledge, pretty much.
So you didn't see the story about that kidnapping at that preschool this morning?
No.
It's okay. He woke up.
Got me. Kidnapping. I get it now.
You get it?
I did see the one story in the Tribune today about the guy who walked into his office and found three severed heads near his desk. I did see that story.
That's a bit above average. When it comes to severed heads near the desk.
Usually you don't get three.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. But if it's just one severed head, really, is it gonna make the trip?
Right.
Probably not. But three.
Three, then you make the local paper.
That's newsworthy. That's above the fold.
Yeah.
That's a lot of severed heads.
That's one head above the fold.
There you go.
Yeah. But, you know.
All right. Well, so the White Sox aren't playing a game tonight. The White Sox won. I can keep going about the weather all day, but that was Sevi Zavala, and you said that this is a man who needs praise.
Yeah, well, you know,
he needs a spotlight.
Sevi Zavala deserves some serious love here. Now, first of all, I mean, yeah, it's great to get the two home runs last night, and one of them was one of those Yankee Stadium foul pole line drive things, but the other, the second one there, was just an absolute bomb. But overall, what he's been doing, especially with Lucas Giolito defensively, has been awesome. And like Lucas said last night, he felt good about the game plan once he and Sebi had talked through it. And like he has done for most of the year, he just 100% gave up control to Sebi Zavala. It's like, okay, I'm just going to throw whatever he says. Whatever he puts down, that's what I'm going to throw. And Lucas Giolito is throwing some of the best ball of his last couple of years here. And Sebi loves the defensive part of it, loves the game planning part of it, has always loved it. Great write-up in The Athletic from James Fegan about Sebi, and Sebi saying that he's always been a catcher. Even when he was like an outfielder at San Diego State, he still was thinking like a catcher and always wanted to be a catcher. He's caught his whole life. He loves the all-encompassing tasks of reading opposing swings and weaving that into strategy. Like he's one of those catcher nerds who loves that stuff. And he was, you know, he wasn't supposed to get as much time as he's been getting these last couple years, but he's been doing really well, and he's a big part of Giolito's success, among others, on that side.
Well, this is a question then about the value of a position if your pitchers do much better with the guy, right? We've had a lot of these types of conversations, whether it was, do you want it to be a bat, or is it strictly a defensive position, or personal catchers for guys, or he didn't set out to be a personal catcher, but over the course of 20 starts, he had 12 with one guy, 8 with another, and the numbers were so drastically different that you stopped being able to ignore it, that sort of thing. Like, at some point, there's obviously a skill and a value in it, and arguably, like, you can, so he has the home runs, that obviously helps the entire team, but if he gets the best out of Lucas Giolito,
yeah,
That makes him valuable.
Without a doubt. And how do you measure, like, how do you figure this out, how somebody gets the most out of another person until there's a big enough body of work? And, you can look at, like, the ERA with him and stuff like that, but it's
that would be the first thing I would think, right? You'd look for numbers with, numbers without.
Right, but it's the soft factors, man. And you know me and the soft factors, but, like, I haven't been able to get this.
I saw you in the soft factors. 94, Tanny?
Fireside Bowl? Fireside Bowl.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Whew. God, that was a crazy place to play.
Sorry for the derailment.
We opened for the Jesus Lizard there. Or Jesus Lizardo. Excuse me. We opened for that guy. It was a pitcher. I forget. I got confused. But I haven't been able to stop thinking about this conversation we had with Joe Girardi a couple weeks ago about what a pitcher needs to know from his catcher. And I thought Girardi was great talking about this.
A pitcher has to know that you'll do whatever it takes to get him through 7 innings that day, and your at-bats don't matter. That's the way I always treated it, right? I always think that if I was going to the cage too much, then I wasn't worried enough about the most important thing. And that now it's putting down, it used to be putting down the right digits. Now they push the right buttons, right? So it's different today than when I did it. But I can go back to watching Yan when he was at Cleveland, right? And Yan was a catcher that always met his pitcher at the foul line and walked in the dugout with his arm around him, talking about probably just what had happened and what was going to happen. So Yan is always thinking about what he needs to do for that pitcher, and how am I going to get through this next inning? And I think pitchers respect that. When they know that you know more about hitters than they do and their stuff, and they can trust you, like John Lieber always used to say, I asked him his philosophy on the plane when we were going to Chicago my first year here. I said, what's your philosophy on pitching? And he said, just hit the mitt. So what does that mean to me? He trusts whatever you put down, and he's just going to execute it. And when a pitcher has that faith in his catcher, it's a great relationship. It gives a confidence to a pitcher that, okay, he's right. So whenever there's hesitation or not conviction in throwing a pitch, it's probably not going to be as good as if there was. So when Yan Gomes puts down a finger, there's conviction. Okay, he wants that slider down and into the left-hander. I believe it, and I'm going to throw it. And they don't worry about it. Yan Gomes is going to block every pitch that I throw. If I want to expand down below the zone, he's saying do it. I trust it, right? What happens if you don't trust it? You usually hang it, right? When you think, I can't throw this ball in the dirt, what are you going to do? You're going to hang it. So I believe that you put Yan Gomes in, he's saving you a half to a run every game. And I think Tucker Barnhart's really good at it too. I really do. So that will never be quantified because you'd have to pay catchers more.
Girardi with the salary shot on.
Yeah, he sticks the landing very, very well. Man, there's a lot there, but you go first. I'm kind of curious how you think that relates directly to Zavala and last night, because. Well, yeah, you go, because I struggle with what he said at the end about like half a run to a run every game,
because he wants to try and express the importance to you. So he goes to, he says you can't quantify it,
and then tries to quantify it, and he quantifies it in a way where, like, if that were true,
yeah,
if it really was worth a run per game, they'd be making $30 million a year,
right. Well,
you know what I mean? They would all be the best players in baseball, the guys that could impact each pitcher a run per game in that way, right? So, like, I think the point and the thought process of the catcher and all that stuff is all spot on. When he then says you can't quantify it, but I think it's this, I'm like, I can't say it's not, but I honestly don't think it is.
Don't let it derail what he's saying.
Okay, I can do that. I just wanted to note that, like, that part at the end is actually the part that stuck with me. But I was like, wait, Yan Gomes, a run per game?
Well, this is why baseball people have end up with maddening conversations, and sometimes will say, I watch the game, or I've been around the game. You don't know what you're talking about, because he can't quantify it, but he just knows it. And I believe what Joe is saying there. It dovetails with a million stories I've heard for years about catchers and what matters and the confidence that you get from a catcher if you are a pitcher. So I think he oversteps as he tries to quantify it. But the other stuff, I feel like he is now. He talked about it with us a couple weeks ago in the best way I've ever heard it talk about. That during the game and frankly during the week, the pitcher needs to know that you think everything about his 6 or 7 innings is more important than your at-bats. And that speaks to the offensive mindset of a million catchers throughout history. Ozzie Guillen was talking about that this morning, like, yeah, maybe you're Johnny Bench, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you just, your 7 innings, the pitcher's 7 innings, it does matter than your at-bats. It does. That you can quantify. If you were to choose, do I want 4 great at-bats from this guy or do I want 7 great innings from that pitcher? You choose that, you know? So I thought it was a beautiful way to say it. How it relates to Sebi, I think Sebi's carving out a long big league career as a defensive-minded catcher. Maybe it's just as a backup, you know? And every once in a while, it'll be somebody's personal. But, man, Sebi is really developing a relationship as a guy who gets it. And those guys stick around in this game.
We can get back to this in a second. We have a small piece of breaking news. Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, and Bears president Kevin Warren have released a joint statement. Today, we met and discussed our shared values and commitment to the city of Chicago, the importance of deep roots, and the need for equitable community investment throughout the city. We are both committed to the idea that the city and its major civic institutions must grow and evolve together to meet the needs of the future. We look forward to continuing the dialogue around these shared values.
Wow.
End quote. That reads to me like good politics.
100%. It speaks to exactly what we talked about in transition as the opportunity for Brandon Johnson to reestablish a good relationship with the Bears and show himself as a guy who can speak to an institution in this town and not alienate angrily the way his predecessor did.
Exactly. And what he said there, and I said he, it's two people, but right, it's a joint statement. Even if they're in Arlington Heights, even when they're in Arlington Heights.
Correct.
The Chicago Bears and the city of Chicago and the mayor of Chicago will have a relationship. It's not like they need to have a relationship. They will have a relationship. They're not going to become the Arlington Heights Bears.
Correct.
They're not the, it's not the Jersey, the Meadowlands Giants.
and the Meadowlands Jets. It's the New York Jets. It's the New York Giants. The Bears do a lot of charity work in the city. They raise, they got a lot of season ticket holders and a lot of business relationships with people who pay for personal seat licenses in the new stadium.
Yes.
That are in Chicago.
Danny, so, when opposing teams, and maybe not teams because maybe they'll go closer, but dignitaries and other people come to town for a Bears game or a Bears-related event, you're going to want to stay in Chicago. Maybe some will stay at the Bears Hotel that they build, but Bears charity events will be at Navy Pier's Grand Ballroom or other places. You're going to want to show off the city as part of the Chicago Bears identity and vice versa. So it only makes sense to do this kind of politicking.
Yeah, and the politicking part of it, of having a relationship with the Bears, like if Lori would have won after all of the trash talking that she did to the Bears, she still would have had a relationship with the Bears. Because you have to have a relationship with the Bears. Mm-hmm. You're the mayor of the city. They're the NFL team. They're the charter franchise. They're the only thing that like really brings the whole city together in that way. You know what I mean? Like you have to have a relationship. But what I liked also the politics side of it is there's nothing in here about a false promise. We're going to change their mind. We're going to keep them in Chicago. We're going to convince them that Soldier Field in the lakefront is the best place for them. When you heard that constantly from all those lunatics,
All we did was laugh at it for the most part.
During the election, remember we played it? There were like nine people.
Yes.
And no one would just come out and say, it's in their best interest to leave. No one would just like, because everyone's like, oh, I don't want to, we had a trash Lori for losing the Bears, and we can maybe save them, and I want to get back to the table, and we can bargain, and we can negotiate, and we can change their mind. And it was all such nonsense. Like, that statement is like, we're going to work together, and we're going to keep talking, and we'll see what happens on a lot of things.
You know what?
It's a good job.
I think it's a really good job.
It's a good job.
And in the future, when you speak of us, speak well. You know, like when we have to work with you and speak of you, we'll speak well. Like, let's go. What are we doing here? You know, it's been a partnership for decades. And I think anyone who really strips it away and thinks logically knows the Bears need to own their own stadium and ought to have a bunch of land around it. And it ought to be convenient. And that might end up being Arlington Heights / the suburbs. And you can live with that reality and deal with it as a Chicagoan and as a mayor with some class.
Well, because, right, like, and I read it again. Like, today we met and discussed our shared values and commitment to the city of Chicago. They don't say commitment to playing in the city of Chicago or staying in the city of Chicago. Uh-huh. They're just committed to the city of Chicago, which we know the Bears are.
Because they're going to be named Chicago and have a C on their helmet.
Yeah, but also, like, philanthropically, man. Like,
yes.
You know, like,
yes.
Like they do stuff with My Block, My Hood, My City.
Oh, absolutely, man.
They do
man.
Stuff with Athletes for Justice.
Of course. Like all that money you're going to make when you're up and running in 5 or 6 years and you've got the cash cow, why don't you divert even more of that back into the city that you've left behind?
And by the way, they probably will.
Yes.
As an effort, whether it's to save face or as a goodwill or because they genuinely believe it or some combination therein. Like, that is maybe the play for Brandon Johnson now. You're leaving, but you're leaving to make a bunch more money. Some companies, Fortune 500 companies, have left Chicago because they can, because it's not named, you know, Chicago Boeing or Chicago, you know, whatever it is, right? Yeah. But the Chicago Bears can't leave. So, hey, we need to have a good relationship. So when you make a whole bunch more money, hook it up.
Yeah.
Hook it up.
It's easier for Brandon Johnson to take this tack as a new guy, perhaps, than Lori with all of those other interests tied in and trying to be a power broker that it was enmeshed with all these other forces, but it's also part of the human nature and the disposition you're wanting to bring to the gig. Lori really wanted to bring a standoffish toughness to the gig, where that is not the brand of this new mayor.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. And I like seeing competence and just like, that's a, you can't poke holes in that.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just, okay, keep it moving.
And healthy adult dealings when you might be parting ways, you know?
You overwhelmingly are parting ways.
All right, so let's go ahead and be grown-ups about this, and how can we still help each other? Because we are still going to need to help each other.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone spins that differently than what, how we both just independently interpreted it. It's like, see, maybe, yeah, maybe, maybe. That would strike me as so unlikely at this point.
Did you see the NBA breaking news that just came down here in the last couple of minutes?
No, sir.
The Phoenix Suns have notified their star Chris Paul that he will be waived, making the future Hall of Famer one of the top free agents this offseason. League sources tell NBA on TNT and Bleacher Report. That from Chris B. Haynes. Do the Bulls need a point guard? How far over the tax would you go to get Chris Paul?
Well, okay, those are two different questions. Do the Bulls need a point guard? Yes. Would they go over the tax to get Chris Paul?
Hey, man.
I'd be floored.
You're an old team trying to win now. You get one more old guy, try to win now.
Again, he makes them better. In a vacuum, I'd be a yes. But your question is, will they go? Michael Reinsdorf said to Casey Johnson, I am willing to pay the luxury tax for a contender.
Well, AK, go try and convince him that if you get Chris Paul, that's a point guard, a guy who can shoot some threes, not brilliantly, but pretty well.
Chris Paul makes everybody around him better.
Yes, he does.
That is what. But he is old and injury prone. I would love it. Period. I would be floored. Because Chris Paul's going to want to go to more of a sure thing, man.
Yeah, he's going to want to go to some place that is gives him a shot to go for a title for a couple of years.
Well, right, but to get Michael Reinsdorf to sign off on it, you have to convince him that could be the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just can't imagine Chris Paul believing that would be the Bulls. But where does he go?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is interesting.
LeBron?
Well, that would be the first one that a lot of people would say, yeah.
Yeah, because they're not going to be able to get Kyrie.
Go back to the Clippers? go play with Paul George and Kawhi? And just, they wait for the playoffs anyway? Just shoot for the sixth seed, stay healthy, and then get in, and everybody try to ramp up?
Yeah, he's going to go one of those two places, isn't he? He's just going to find a way to wedge himself into LA. I bet he plays with LeBron. I bet he's going to be a Laker. Because they're not going to be able to close and get Kyrie. So Chris Paul and LeBron and Anthony Davis will load manage their way to the playoffs and then try to win a chip there.
I'd be surprised.
Guys, I'm not sure how we missed this. Going back to the Bears real quick before we break for John, I just want to make sure we got this in.
Thank you.
There is a new suburb, apparently, that a Bear has been cited in for the new Bear Stadium.
What is it?
Did you see there's an actual black bear running around the Gurnee Mall today?
No.
I just saw the video come across Twitter right now.
Told you, I don't really
Somebody
watch
got a black bear crossing an intersection by the Gurnee Mall. An actual black bear.
Yeah?
In Gurnee. By the mall.
Is there a Topgolf?
See, ever since the kidnapping thing, I'm waiting for the punchline. I don't trust you.
I'll send you the video.
Okay. Oh, so it's real. Okay. Yeah, that's horrifying. That's scary. In Gurnee, of all places.
Gurnee.
There's another quote from Brandon Johnson at an earlier event when asked about the Bears. The Sun-Times has it.
Is it about the black bear in Gurnee?
It's not.
Is it about Chris Paul? Bears. It's not about Chris Paul either?
Lots going on. We have to restore some confidence and order and calm in the city. We have to have conversations, and unfortunately, when it comes to many dynamics in the city of Chicago, conversations break down because people have vested interests, and they might get in their feelings a little bit.
Woo-hoo-hoo! That's both ends of what I was just saying about Lori. Vested interests enmeshed with the power brokers and get in her feelings a little bit. Wow.
Yeah.
That's not how you diplomat. That's not how you politic.
But he does say, once they have a real seat at the table to discuss a pathway forward to keep the Bears in the city. I am the hardest working person in the city of Chicago. I'm going to spend every waking moment to make sure that every aspect of the city of Chicago, that we are addressing it with care and sensitivity and thoughtfulness, and that also applies to the Bears. I grew up with the Super Bowl shuffle. We want to make sure that we can keep shuffling here in the city of Chicago with the Bears. Good luck, sir. John Morosi on Armageddon in New York, next on The Score.
Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Morosi. Where is Jeff Passan in all of this?
Here's John Morosi.
Where is Jeff Passan?
Should we just call Jeff Passan right now?
Yes, just call him.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
JP Morosi had it first. How you feeling, Padres fans?
MLB Network insider.
And with the White Sox in New York, a very special day for us at MLB Network on Tuesday. The great Liam Hendricks and his wife, Christy, will be in studio with us to talk about their inspiring story.
Me and Christy, when we got to Chicago, we wanted to make sure that we left the city a better place than we got to it. And I think that ovation and that kind of emotion going through it, I think just shows that we've somewhat accomplished the job so far, and hopefully we can continue it on for the rest of our tenure.
It was just, you know, awesome. That's like the best way to describe it.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy, I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me, it means the world.
With Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
He's in New York. They're not playing a baseball game because it looks like the world's ending out there. John Morosi on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. The news is a doubleheader tomorrow with White Sox and Yankees, JP, but paint a picture for us.
Well, good evening, and I certainly had hoped that I'd be at Yankee Stadium right now giving you a great report on the White Sox BP and the lineup and everything going on, but obviously it's a very different day, and it's been surreal. You could just tell the photos I'm sure you've seen of what New York and New Jersey look like. I'm actually back here at our MLB Network studios speaking to you here over the phone, and it's been a lot of uncertainty today. I've driven up close to Yankee Stadium, but that was right when we got word that the game had been postponed, so turned around and came back here. So it's just been very eerie. I would say that the sky has been this really odd hue of orange, a little bit of redness, you thought at different times, ominous, eerie, all of those things. And even when I landed here last night, walking around town, it didn't smell right. It smelled, it was that kind of a noxious smell that when you're walking around it, it was like a bonfire going on everywhere, and it was like you could taste that really noxious scent. It was pretty awful, to be honest with you. And so I think MLB eventually made the right call today. I could just tell myself, you know, a little bit of a scratchy throat. It's an uncomfortable day. It's an uncomfortable environment to be in, and I think you have to not only think about the players, but also the fans and the staff and everybody that would be there tonight. It's sadly not the right day to play. And I think too, this is a big reminder of the interconnectedness of the sports world, the interconnectedness of our world, broadly speaking, in terms of the environment. Obviously, these wildfires are happening in Canada, up in Nova Scotia and in Quebec, a pretty good distance away from where I am right now, and yet it's impacting us. And I think this is one of those days where, candidly, looking at the science of it and how dry the spring and summer have been here in this area, and this is one of those days where it's a reality of the changing nature of our climate impacting our daily lives in this very what in the grand scope of the world is a relatively trivial matter of a ball game. But I think it drives home that point for all of us, just how interconnected and honestly how vulnerable all of our pastimes are when something that's happening a good distance away from here is actually having a very negative impact on the air that we breathe.
Rescheduled as part of a doubleheader tomorrow. We'll see if the air quality even allows for that. And it's obviously a much bigger situation. But we will not let it derail our baseball conversation with John Morosi.
Right.
No way. So
he's talking about the end of the world and breathable air.
Yep.
You're like, eh.
We talk to him, what, once every couple of weeks? I mean, I get excited.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is important every now and then. I mean,
You're right.
I feel like there's a lot riding on this conversation because my undergraduate degree, not that I've ever actually used it, it actually was in environmental science and public policy. So you're probably talking to,
wow,
I would suppose, the right baseball insider on this particular day. We don't have to delve into the granular particulars of climate change or the friction of the air as the ball travels off it in a polluted environment like this. But yeah, this has been a day where my reflections have often gone back to what I studied once as a young man and what still we have to do as citizens now.
Well, you know,
keep calling out Jeff Passan.
but Passan would be lost in this conversation, Morosi.
Rosenthal
sure
has
Jeff,
no idea.
Jeff could stand toe-to-toe and talk about anything with anybody at any time. I've got complete confidence in my friend.
Well,
yeah, just ask him.
Look, yeah, see, this is the big deal here, is that the White Sox, they're back up to 8 games under .500. Their run differential is minus -46, but they're 4.5 games back. And actually, they've been playing pretty well. Over the last 30 days, their team ERA is third in all of baseball, J.P. Morosi. So some things are going well. Kenny Williams came out over the weekend, told our Bruce Levine that they're going to win the division. They have a shot still?
They do. And I think that's why we have to collectively pump the brakes on the Giolito trade talk or Graveman or anybody else that we would mention. And certainly I think those possibilities still linger out there somewhere in the distance. But the way they've played of late has affirmed the reality, especially when you look at their division, that there really is not a team in the Central that the White Sox should be afraid of. Let's be honest here. And they're a game back of Cleveland, and Cleveland's in second place, and they've really I think Cleveland has underperformed what their talent could be. Detroit has not been the same team since Riley Green and Eduardo Rodriguez were injured. The Royals obviously are in last place. And then you really start looking at it and saying, how much are you worried about the Twins? And the Twins have lost 3 straight. So I think that we can all look at this White Sox team with clear-eyed vision in 2 different ways. Number one is, yes, they are flawed. Yes, they have underperformed badly over the last couple of years. That can all be true, but it can also be true that they still have a chance to win the division, and that when you are 4.5 games back of a vulnerable first-place team, generally speaking, you don't sell. Now, if they did decide to sell, I would say that Giolito throwing 6 no-hit innings and being dominant against the Yankees in New York probably got the attention of some GMs around the league. But as I said, we're not there yet. And Kenny Williams, knowing how competitive Kenny is, his disposition, I think, is always such that he would look for a reason to hold or buy,
yep,
as opposed to looking for a reason to sell. Where I think Cleveland, they, when all things are equal, if they're kind of stuck in the middle, they tend to sell. The White Sox, all things being equal, tend to buy or hold. And so I would expect that we go with the past track record. And I think the White Sox would have to fall back pretty significantly for a Graveman deal, for a Giolito deal to become a reality.
JP, do you believe that as soon as next year, the umpires will have some sort of help via technology on balls and strikes?
I don't know if I would say that I'm confident in that happening next year. I do think that within the next several years we will see that. And I think that I like the way you phrased the question, Danny, because some form is a good way to talk about it, because there are two very different realms. There is the automated ball strike call at all times, and then there is the 3 challenges per game. Different versions of this, of course, have been piloted at different levels of the minor leagues and the partner leagues for MLB to test this. And where I think there is good common ground would be those 3 challenges per game. Because I'm someone who believes that the vast majority of umpires do an excellent job the vast majority of the time. And they do. They really do. But there are certainly a few calls here or there that can change an entire game. And remember, that was the reason that we had instant replay to begin with. We wanted replay because we did not like the fact that Jim Joyce was the biggest story in American sports for 2 weeks and is still talked about to this day. We wanted something that would keep umpires from becoming the story. And still, when there's an egregious miss, which happens because we're all human, they become the story in a big way. And I think if you have those three challenges, we all see it is probably the single easiest thing to replay in baseball. The irony is here, baseball has done the hard stuff first in terms of a call, the bang bang play at first base, the bang bang tag on a steal at second, how that play can look, and it can take some time to really evaluate that. If the ball is in or out of the box on a video screen, we've been able to figure that out since the days of the Atari video game system 40 years ago. So we've got that one pretty well figured out. And I think that would take 2 seconds. Okay, is it in? Is it out? Okay, good. Thumbs up, thumbs down. We're playing. And that is like a three-second appeal. And I think that umpires would be okay with that. And I think that managers and players would too. Because one of the things that I think that some people in the game are concerned about is that pitch that's never been a strike, that misses the catcher's glove by 6 inches, but catches some little piece of that 3D plate, and all of a sudden that's a strike. And I think that really people in the game don't want that to be a strike, I don't think. And I think they're okay with some imperfections and some nuance, but let's help umpires get the biggest calls right.
John, that all makes sense, and I've talked to people in the minors who love the challenge system. Right now, the challenge system is 4 days a week in the minors, and the full automatic system is the first 3 days. So Theo's gaining data. He's generating data, and is it data or data? He's generating data, and he'll make his choice based on that. Wanted to ask you about the Braves, what they've been doing. It's fascinating to me. Spencer Strider, a very aggressive promotion a little more than a year ago, and he was amazing. Then they did it again, and then they did it again with this kid, A.J. Smith-Shawver, who has not made, I believe, more than 3 starts at high A, double A, or triple A, and is now in the majors. Is this a sign of things to come, what the Braves are doing with these aggressive promotions?
Well, it's a great question. I think that the Braves, first of all, this plan doesn't work well unless you've got a really good scouting director and a really good player development system. And that's one of the reasons why Dana Brown right now is the GM of the Astros, because this was what he did so well for the Braves, is getting the right guys. And Smith-Shawver is one of Dana's picks. I think that I really am interested and intrigued by Alex Anthopoulos' strategy here. And, of course, Mike Soroka has struggled. That's why he got sent back down to the minor leagues and why Smith-Shawver is up now. There seems to be an awareness, and this might sound a little cold, but I think it's just the reality of the game, that if you are really too deliberate developing pitchers, that sometimes you might be shortening the number of quality major league pitches that you're going to get out of that arm. Every arm has only so many miles in it. And certainly there's a variance of that outcome, but there's only so many bullets that each arm has, so to speak. And I think that you're seeing the Braves say, wait a minute, we are in our competitive window, and I'm not going to let talented pitchers throw some of their precious pitches that they've got left in their arm against single A hitters, against double A hitters, when we think they can help us win major league games right now for a team that we believe can win the World Series. Now, not every team is the same. Not every team's window is the same. There are probably teams that are still building to where it wouldn't make sense for the Kansas City Royals to rush up a pitcher to the major leagues right now. But I think for the teams that are in it, the Braves are one, certainly that fits that description, that maybe Texas with the DeGrom injury, maybe somebody else steps in, and obviously Dane Dunning's already done a very good job there. But I really think, Matt, that you're seeing certain teams, and the Braves are one, that are saying, you know what, to heck with this, you got to have 100 innings at this level and then 150 the next one. No. If you're ready, I want your pitches at my major league team, because honestly, with all pitchers in this world, we don't know how many innings you've got, how many pitches you've got. So when we are in win now mode, you're going to darn well be using those pitches where you can help me win a World Series championship.
This is just not enough time every 2 weeks, JP. Get your butt to Chicago. Let's go. Let's go hang out at a ballpark.
Now, I've got that. It's a great suggestion. I've been looking at my schedule, and I've got some ideas there. Probably second half, probably post All-Star break. But my friends, we're going to make this happen.
See you, buddy.
All the best, guys. Thanks so much.
That's John Morosi, MLB Network. More Bears talk still to come. People, I interacted with them in the wild today. I have reports on all of you. It's a situation. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Well, that and there's the name.
Afternoons on the Score.
All right, Speaks, real quick. You're on the moving walkway at the airport.
Yes, sir.
You got the double stroller and a few bags. There's someone ahead of you who is not walking on the moving walkway, and so you can't get the double stroller around them. So you stop on the moving walkway. No big deal. Owen's enjoying it. He's never been on a moving walkway before. Hmm. We're about 50 feet till the end.
Yeah.
So we got, I don't know, 15 seconds left of this ride, basically, at the airport. Person comes up behind me. We've stopped because the person in front of us has stopped, and we've got the double stroller, so we cannot get around them. Person behind me says, I guess I should have walked. I got like four bags. I'm wrangling these kids. I turn around to this person, and I say, yeah, I guess we cost you 15 seconds. Sorry. In my very patented sarcastic tone.
Oh, God, I know it so well. I can picture you.
Am I wrong?
Someone else got it today, am I right?
Oh, my God. Somebody else got it. I guess I
should have walked.
And the moving walkway is a little bit of a Wild West situation in terms of etiquette because you were in a very specific spot. You're a double wide, and you could not therefore pass the single wide. This was a single wide behind you, and you were an impediment to what he considers the standard etiquette of the moving walkway, right? I understand his point. That's where personal, you know, kindness or jackassery comes into play. That's a jackass thing to say out loud to you. Jackass.
I couldn't believe it.
And repeat it. Did you say there was also someone in front of you and that's why you couldn't move?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
He's a double wide.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
The person in front of us wasn't walking on the moving walkway.
Yeah,
they were taking the free ride. We walked as far as we could.
Yeah.
And then stopped because we had a double stroller.
It's probably a limper in front of you. Let's be honest.
We're at the end. You know what I mean? 15 seconds. Person behind me, she goes, ugh, I guess I should have walked.
Uh-huh.
I got four bags, two kids, a double stroller, and you see the person in front of me isn't walking, lady. What would you like me to do?
Well maybe she was talking to the person in front of you. Maybe she wasn't talking to you.
Nah, she was talking to me.
Maybe she was trying to bond with you about the person in front who wasn't walking.
Right. That could happen, too.
That could totally happen.
I was hoping that it was Owen who was standing still because he didn't want to walk, and we could have laid into you for having a kid that wants to stand on the moving sidewalk.
He was a gem today.
Was he?
Oh, he loved it so much.
That's beautiful.
He loved it so much.
That's what
I mean, he asked no fewer than 500 questions on the flight. Like, we were taking off. Like, the landing gear wasn't even in the underbelly of the plane. And he was like, are we landing? No.
Not yet.
It was like the flying equivalent of are we there yet?
It's phenomenal.
It was ridiculous. Want to do a Bears experiment coming up. Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.